Nursing in Maine. The profession is changing as the state faces an impending shortage of nurses. A coalition of nursing organizations in Maine recently released its Maine Nursing Forecaster, and its predictions are dire. The report predicts that Maine will face a shortage of more than 3,000 nurses by 2025. Why? There are a number of factors. Many Maine nurses are close to retirement age. At the same time, Maine's population is aging, and more people need nursing care. And there's also a shortage of nursing educators. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we will discuss the future of nursing in Maine, how different organizations are trying to recruit and train more nurses, and also how the profession itself is changing from a focus on acute care to prevention, more technology, and even more responsibilities. Maine Calling is next, but first, this news update. From Maine Public Radio, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Over the years, the profession of nursing has evolved a lot and continues to do so. Nurses are a critical part of Maine's healthcare system, but many are on the cusp of retirement. Today, we're going to discuss the challenges and opportunities facing nurses in Maine. With me in the studio, Donna DeBlois is president. Is it DeBlois or DeBlois?
DeBlois.
Okay. Great.
Thank you.
President and CEO of Home Health Visiting Nurses of Southern Maine. Sue Sepples, Associate Professor of Nursing at USM and a founding member of the Maine Partners in Nursing and Practice. And Michael Nozdrovicki?
Nozdrovicki.
Is an associate professor and department chair at Southern Maine Community College. As always, we want to hear from you. Are you a nurse or hoping to become one or thinking about it? Our phone number 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Sue, let's begin by talking about the predicted nursing shortage, which I mentioned at the very beginning of the program. If Maine is indeed short 3,000 nurses the year 2025, what does that mean on the ground? What does that practically mean for hospitals, for patients, for other facilities?
Well, I think, first of all, nurses are the major healthcare providers in the community and in the hospital. So it means the quality of health care. It has to do with the outcomes of health care. It has to do with who is going to be taking care of me when I get older, who is going to be taking care of our family members. So looking at nursing is really a health care crisis. When you don't have enough nurses, you don't have enough folks at the bedside, enough folks in the community who can provide that essential care.
Was that calculation of 3,000, a shortfall of 3,000 by the year 2025, a worst-case scenario or a very practical, this is how many people were that are entering nursing school every year, this is how many people are expected to retire, and this is how it adds up?
I don't think it's a worst-case scenario. I think it's a very realistic scenario. We have an aging population in Maine. We have an aging population in nursing, so many of our nurses are going to be retiring. Many of our teachers who teach nursing and our educators are going to be retiring. And we have an older population, so those folks will need care. And so the need for nurses is growing, and the number of nurses is not growing as fast.
Donna, what are we seeing today? Not in 2025. You I guess, are in a position to hire a lot of nurses. Is it difficult for you to recruit and hire?
It is very difficult for us to recruit and rehire. I actually have some data. Currently, our shortage today is between 700 and 900. That's the prediction for today. One of the things I wanted to add to this is how we got to those numbers. We have an organization in Maine called the Maine Nursing Action Coalition, and we actually received some funding through Robert Wood Johnson and AARP, as well as three of our largest health systems, to actually do a data workforce study. And so it is really rather intimidating what we're facing today, plus adding to the number that Sue was talking about. And worst-case scenario is closer to 6,000. If you look at our workforce, over 10% are over the age of 70 that are working with us. What we're losing today—
Over 10% are over the age of 70?
That are actively working. In the state of Maine, over 90% of the nurses who are licensed in Maine are working close to full-time, and we're all working. So we can only steal from each other. So that is the challenge that we face today. The hospitals, two of the major hospitals in Maine, both have between 500 to 700 nursing vacancies today. And that is incredible.
I'm guessing that that 500 to 700 per major health major hospital, even larger statewide, means things like double shifts, people who are tired.
Travelers. We have a lot of travelers.
And so that, in theory, not only can affect the mental health of the nurses, but also the care of all of us.
It is. One other challenge we have in the state of Maine is nurses. We have a huge shortage of nurses going into specialty care. So the emergency room, the operating room, home health, hospice. It's not the old, you get out of nursing school and work on the med-surg floor for a while, and then you move on to a different specialty. Those days have changed. We need to look at how are we mentoring and bringing in new nurses so that we're training them from the beginning and not further into their career.
Michael, talk to me about how nursing has changed even in the last decade. I think a lot of people realize that perhaps it's changed a lot since their mother or grandmother went to nursing school, but it's even changed in the last few years, hasn't it?
It certainly has. Just to Donna's point also, as we look at those nurses who are in the older years, those nurses have years of experience. And so when we do lose those nurses by numbers, we lose the breadth of experience that those nurses have gone through for the many, many years of practice. And so when we put new nurses out into the workforce, they don't necessarily have the years of experience or the resilience that some of the older nurses have had over the years. But in terms of what's changed so much over the last 10 years in nursing, I think clearly technology and the advances in technology and the impact all of that has had on the nursing profession and the speed in which nurses try to accommodate all of that. And we will see nurses on the front lines in an acute care setting. They will also be in the home care setting. An electronic medical record, which is something that is new to healthcare over the last 10 years and how it's been impacted and rolled out. Some of the newer nurses into the profession are much more easily adaptable to the technology than some of the nurses who have been into the career for a longer period of time. And I think it's important that we bring together the newer nurses with the nurses who have been functioning for quite some time, and they complement each other. So it's important to have a nice mix in the workforce. But there's definitely no shortage of new information that the nurses must acquire as they're practicing. And it's also from an education perspective, what do we continue to teach? There are some fundamentals of nursing, some basic skills of nursing. But those have changed over the last 10 years dramatically, and we have to incorporate a lot of the newer technologies. We use simulation centers to try to advance and put students in those situations prior to actually being out in the clinical setting. So that's new.
You know, you talked a lot about technology, and I'm wondering if it's frustrating. And again, I'm making assumptions here, so jump in if I'm wrong, but I'm assuming many people go into nursing because they like the idea of taking care of people. And then you introduce this whole nother layer that really doesn't have to do with care, but has to do with keeping track of stuff, right. And more. I mean, that sort of maybe understates it. Does that change who might be attracted to nursing and how? Go ahead.
I think what's attractive about that is I do think we have a generation of newer nurses, and this could be a traditional student right out of high school, or this could be a second career student who are actually embracing the technology that's out there today. One of the things that we're trying to do within our profession is to have nurses work at the highest level of their expertise, experience, and degree. So what we're really asking nursing to do today is to become more savvy at critical thinking. And really look at what is the information that's being fed to them through technology, through paraprofessionals, through the information that they're getting. A lot of care can be provided remotely. That's a new realm for us, which is one of the things I find to be so wonderful about the nursing practice is, as I was saying in our conversation before coming on the air, it's one of the degrees that you can get in college that you has probably the most diversity. You can use it all over the world. You can use it at home. You can work remotely. You can be in acute care, home care, long-term care. You can travel. There are so many different things to it that I think as a profession, we need to always, always put forth.
Okay. You mentioned, Donna, that 10% of nurses working in Maine today are over 70. Isn't nursing a very physical profession? I mean, isn't it hard on one's back, on one's knees?
Well, the average age of a nurse in Maine is 49. The age of my workforce in the home health and hospice field is 55. It's hard. It's hard work.
So, yes, to answer your question physically in terms of what nurses must go through. But we have learned over the years to take care of our backs. We've learned methods of how to move patients safely, because what we did struggle through, we didn't know. Research and studies have shown us that we certainly would better move a patient by using a device rather than actually physically trying to move the patient. So that's another good thing, is that nursing practice and nursing research has helped us to look at ways we have done things over the years so that we can certainly preserve the profession and keep nurses safe.
Sue, I want to go back to talking about the shortage for a little bit, in that I know that the University of Southern Maine's program is really highly desirable. I also know that if one applies, they're probably not going to get in next year. So even though we have this impending crisis, you're not able to accept all the qualified students. Can you talk about why that is, and also, you know, the challenges to changing it?
Sure. Well, there's a few myths about that. One is that if you are a high school student coming out of high school and you have good grades and you get good grades in the sciences, our state programs do accept you. I think what happens is a lot of students leave Maine. They go someplace shiny and wonderful for their first year, and then they say, gee, maybe I could get the same education in Maine. I actually sat on a plane with a young girl who was looking at the University of Kentucky for nursing school, and she, unfortunately for her, probably, she thought, sat next to me, and I said, why the University of Kentucky? Let's talk about that. So, yes, for our traditional students, they can pretty much get into our programs, our state programs. For the students who are returning, it is very competitive, again, because we have a certain number of slots. Nursing is in an education perspective, you really need to have a very controlled number of student to faculty ratio, because you
I read to 8 to 1, is that right?
8 to 1 in the clinical setting, yeah. So that creates the need for very specific placement, and we're very good about our placement in terms of our graduate programs, making sure that we have the slots for people to have the caliber of preceptors that they need to have. We work very hard to make sure that when we get students in, that they can complete their program in the allotted time. So we don't take students that we can't serve. So there is a number, and we do turn qualified students away. The reason for that is clinical placement, and it's faculty. And if we have a shortage of nursing that is here, and if we have a shortage in nursing that is pending, it is minimal in comparison to the shortage of faculty that we have. We already have in Maine 33% of our faculty are over the age of 60, and we are losing our experienced faculty, and we are not getting people going into nursing education at the rate that we need them to. And other states have looked at that, and that has become the focal point of their change, is to really address the faculty shortage.
And I think also part of the faculty shortage is the enthusiasm for teaching and how that's done. And you can take a clinical nurse who's really an expert in the clinical field, but they might not necessarily be an excellent professor. And so we're trying to find ways to work together to bring the crossover from the classroom into the clinical and from the clinical into the classroom so that people work together on that. We could easily at Southern Maine Community College, I think we certainly accept all of the students who actually meet the requirements for the program and through the community college system. So we will accept those students. Unfortunately, we're full for the fall and we are filling up for the spring. And so as students meet those requirements, they could be a semester or two out. And depending on their life circumstances, they may or may not be able to wait for the program. So the nursing shortage definitely starts with a shortage of the number of seats that we have in the classroom. And if we could increase that number, and I think we can find the faculty, But once we find the faculty, it's the resources to be able to support that faculty and to be able to pay for that.
And when you say the resources, I'm guessing it, you know, teaching a nurse doesn't involve a classroom necessarily. You need equipment.
Correct.
And you need expensive equipment.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I think the fortunately, our clinical partners provide much of that equipment once we're outside into the clinical sites. But allowing us to get those clinical sites and the number of clinical sites we need requires also to have the as you said, that 1-to-6, 1-to-8 ratio of faculty towards a professor in the clinical setting. And we can find that adjunct faculty, but the ability to support them financially and employ them is a challenge for us. And so we're hoping to partner more with our clinical partners to allow that to happen.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say the other thing is that at the end of their program, almost all programs have a preceptor experience where our students have 154 hours.
And a preceptor is a?
Is someone who works one-on-one with a student and teaches them. And they go in and they completely fulfill the role of that preceptor side by side with them so that they get the experience of working as a nurse. And they're all over. They're in the community, they're in the hospital, they're in the OR, and having those precepted experiences is also a huge drain on the institutions that we ask to have them because it slows the nurse down, as you can imagine, to have to explain everything that you're doing to someone who's brand new.
I want to read to you something that I read this morning. This is from a Bangor Daily News article. Jackie Farwell, who's a reporter for the Bangor Daily News in November, had written a story about the nursing shortage. And then she wrote a follow-up story where she said that as soon as her story was printed, my phone started ringing. Several nurses called to share what they viewed as a serious omission from the state's plan to address the shortage. And that omission is job dissatisfaction. Nurses in Maine across the country are overburdened and burning out, they said. They're working within a healthcare system that prioritizes profits over patients, discouraging new nurses from entering the field and leaving experienced ones dissatisfied, the nurses explained. Are you all hearing the same thing?
Yes.
I'm hearing some of that, yes.
The turnover is very high. They say that about 20% of new nurses leave the profession in the first year. And that's a failure of both the education systems and the practice environment because we should be better preparing them for what to expect and to negotiate that system while they're in school. That's our job as educators. And then the support and mentoring that needs to happen to someone new, to as challenging a profession as nursing is, has to happen. That has to be a part of every mentoring program there is in nursing.
I would like to add to that. I think we've been rather unique and fortunate in the state of Maine. Many years ago, we had the opportunity to get some funding through Robert Wood Johnson through a different grant and actually created the Maine Nurse Core Competency so that we could actually look at what is it that they need in the practice situation that they can be taught in school and how do we measure that. And what's nice about this particular tool is it starts within the academic world first, and then we've actually, within the healthcare settings, meaning, and I know in most of the hospitals and some of the home health agencies, this measuring tool is actually utilized so you can measure from where they were in school and how are they doing in their annual performance year to year to year, which is really nice. We also have the opportunity through the Lunter Deneen Foundation to have a free program up to date for preceptors within the work environment to have some uniform training across all healthcare settings across the state of Maine. And so far, this program has been provided 3 times, very well attended, and has received some really high remarks. So we have some opportunities here in Maine, but we do need to do a better match between academia and the workplace.
All right. Well, on that note, we do have to take a break. We're talking about nursing in Maine. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as does BCM Environmental and Land Law. Proud to announce the opening of their Portland office, Learn more at nhlandlaw.com. And Pika Energy, providing Maine-made solar equipment, including the new Coral battery for home backup. More at pikaenergy.com.
On the next Fresh Air, we talk with National Geographic conservation photographer Paul Nicklin, who specializes in taking pictures of the polar regions. He's been focusing on the impact of climate change on polar bears, penguins, sea animals, and the ice. He grew up in an Inuit community a few hundred miles from the North Pole. Join us.
Join us for Fresh Air this evening at 7 o'clock. Journalism and news coverage you can trust. Great classical music on the growing Maine Public Classical Network. Choice and convenience at mainepublic.org. How important is preserving and strengthening public broadcasting here in Maine for the future, for you and your community? Charting a Bold Future is Maine Public's comprehensive campaign to secure the future of public broadcasting in Maine. Your support for the campaign is your way to cast your vote for the future of Maine's public radio, television, and online services. To learn how you can be part of Charting a Bold Future, visit mainepublic.org and click on About.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, The Future of Nursing in Maine. With me in our studio, Sue Sepples, an associate professor of nursing at USM and a founding member of the Maine Partners in Nursing in Practice. Michael Nozdrovicki is an associate professor and department chair of Southern Maine Community College, and Donna DeBlois, president and CEO of Home Health Visiting Nurses of Southern Maine. What questions do you have? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. I'll start here with an email from Maxine. Is the nursing shortage relating to just nurses or also nurse practitioners, CNAs, et cetera?
The nursing shortage, if you will, relates to all of those. But I also do want to say that any area of the healthcare profession, so there are a shortage of respiratory therapists, radiography. So anything that's doing that we're coming into is definitely going to be impacted.
All right. On the calls, we'll start in Harpswell. In Arundel with Harpswell. Hi, go ahead.
Hi, I know my name's confusing. I am a nurse. I'm a clinical instructor at USM, and I just wanted to tip my hat at Sue Sepples because she's the in-class instructor for many of my students, and they love her. So I thank her for making my job easier.
You very much.
But I also just wanted – I had two things that I was thinking about while listening. One is I think one of the problems that Maine has, and this has been touched upon a little bit, is the fact that many organizations and hospital settings and clinics don't like to hire new graduates. And I think that's a huge problem because new graduates have a lot to offer. And I know some of my students get nervous about getting a job after school. And my professors, when I was becoming a nurse, said, oh, don't worry, you're a nurse. There's a shortage. It's fine, but it wasn't. And it was difficult because people don't want to hire new grads. And so I think that's one area of what complication, which makes create some of the shortage. And then another area, which is kind of a completely different area, is I am at USM as a graduate student right now becoming a nurse practitioner, and there are only three people that I have met in my program who are becoming nursing educators. So I know that was touched upon earlier too, but it's such a small percentage of people who want to go into the teaching part of it. And I think the reason behind that is because so many of us do want to stay in the field working with patients.
And the other factor that goes along with that is the institutions are able to pay much higher salaries than the academic centers.
Right. You can make more working as an RN than you can working as a nursing instructor. Go ahead.
I would like to go back to the new hire piece. What's interesting is I think as we're looking at how are we going to solve this issue with our nursing shortage and transitioning new grads to the practice setting, some of the areas that we're concentrating on is actually have them going into some of the specialty areas for placements early where you wouldn't traditionally hire a new grad. But before they graduate, they're actually getting some ground floor training and education so that they are able to start transitioning into those positions earlier. The other thing I just want to share in my world of home health and hospice, it wasn't until this past legislative session we could actually hire a new grad easily. It had to be this whole application process. So that we are very, very aware of it. We are trying to broaden the scope in which we can hire.
I'd say a couple of things about that. One is that I've been teaching now for 21 years, and the students that I'm teaching today are not the same students that I was teaching 20 years ago. That, first of all, you've said it's a very competitive process to get into nursing school. It's also a very competitive process to stay in nursing school. It's one of the most rigorous educations, I think, at the university. And it is there are some phenomenal folks who are in our classes, and we have a lot of folks who have second degrees and are coming back to nursing as a second degree. We have folks that are coming out of the military who have experienced amazing things and come and sit in our classrooms. And the wealth of who I have in my classroom has changed. So the new grad of 2017 is not the new grad of 1996. So that's something that we have to really be aware of. The other thing is a lot of states are creating really interesting strategic partnerships to get folks to go into nursing education, where they're paying a portion of their salary so they can take some time away from direct care. They're incorporating some of the work they do as clinical instructors into their education degrees, and they're paying them to go to school with fellowships, and then they're asking that they give back 5 years, a minimum of 5 years to teaching. So those are things that we could be looking at in Maine. We need a new whole focus on getting faculty in the classroom, because we have people who want to nurse. We need teachers who want to teach nurses.
Harpswell, thanks so much for your call. You'll like this, Michael. Brittany on Facebook says, I am an SMCC nursing student entering my third semester in September. It is a great program, and I am excited to enter the nursing profession next year. Great segment today. An email from Mimi talking about the physical demands. A nurse can only do so much to protect his or her back. Patient behavior is unpredictable. Even a healthy young mother can faint. It can be difficult to deliver safe, quality nursing care when too many patients are assigned to the nurse. Salary is not the answer, as no money is worth working in such an environment. Mm. Thoughts?
I looked at one piece of data that looked at why nurses leave, and salary was fifth or sixth on the list. It was short staffing, too many tasks, lack of upward mobility, poor management, and then money. So I think really we talk a lot about looking for a healthy work environment and knowing how to assess that as you're looking for a job. So I think there's some savvy folks going out there into the working world who are going to be asking some good questions about how do you support the new grad. And then I just want to, you know, count back to the whole program that we just had with the Lender Dineen Foundation, where we had 200 nurses from across Maine who are learning, who have invested themselves into a really terrific program. It's an online program, and then a full day of workshops with educators from across the state. And we are saying to them, it's important to keep getting your education, and it's important to keep, because their expertise keeps our new grads at the bedside too.
We're going to go to Jess, who's calling from South Portland. Hi, Jess. Go ahead.
Hi, I love that you're doing this program today, so I'm very excited about it. And I was an older graduate from SMCC. I had a former degree, and then I went back as a nurse several years ago, and I'm excited. I'm going to go to USM this fall to get my BSN, so I'm very excited about that. One thing that really upsets me with the nurses is that we kind of always turn in on ourselves, like, oh, we're not doing enough, we need to do more. And I strongly disagree. I think it's the industry that needs to do more for us. I think the idea of that we're, you know, all the studies show shorter hours are better, but the hospitals are moving back to 12-hour shifts. We often don't get our lunch breaks. We never get a 15-minute break, you know, for so the idea that, yes, we have new lifts and we have new, you know, we know how to turn patients better, or we know how to, you know, support ourselves physically in certain ways. However, we still don't get lunch breaks. We are constantly and chronically understaffed. The minute we have a low census, they cut all the nurses. And the floor that I work on is a very unpredictable floor. And we have cut positions. We have cut all sorts of things. And then when we are busy, you know, we get ourselves into critically and unsafe positions where we are understaffed. They're trying to call nurses in and people don't want to come in for $4 extra an hour. I feel like it's the industry that really, really needs to support us. And legislatively or collectively, we are a powerful group of individuals. We are passionate about our work. I love that number 5 on the list of why people leave is a financial reason. It really is unsafe and unfair work conditions, I think.
Okay, Jess, thanks so much for your call. I'm going to give the panel a chance to respond.
Well, every single bit of research that has come out in the last 20 years says that patient safety and quality care is compromised by inadequate staffing. More, not morbidity statistics that just say that people don't do as well, mortality statistics that say that people die if they do not have adequate staffing, and not just adequate staffing, well-educated nurses. So the educational level of the nurse, the number of nurses providing that care matters. And you're absolutely right. Nurses have to be strong advocates for the need for an adequate, well-educated, promoted staff that has real rewards for advancing their own knowledge and education. And I'm even looking at some research that's showing – I work as a critical care nurse on the night shift, and I'm in my 50s. And I can tell you that at about 3 in the morning, I feel like I'm going to die. A lot of hospitals have instituted naps where nurses have a place to go and take a nap, and they're covered for that time so that they can take a nap in the middle of the night and have their patients taken care of. So there are strategies for supporting and keeping a healthy workforce. And I agree. It's time that we all step up. There's places that the industry absolutely needs to step up and create a safer, healthier workplace for the nurses that were graduating.
I think nursing leadership over the state is actually looking into this much more closely, and I think promoting younger, newer leaders to step up and have a voice and be creative and problem-solving to try to resolve this is key, and I know a lot of institutions are rewarding for that.
I do have to agree, though. I don't think this is at all a new problem. I think this is something that when I came into nursing back in 81, this was a major nursing shortage, and it had seemed to improve over time. I don't think this is a problem that's unique to Maine. I think it's across the country that these are really the same types of problems that you just stated. And obviously, one of the reasons I went into leadership was to be able to help to promote a safer environment, to help to impact nursing on a greater scale, being involved in my nursing committees in the institutions that I worked in, giving a voice to nursing at the leadership table, and really does go a long way in making an impact. And I think that's important. So I just want to encourage you to certainly develop your voice, to certainly continue to let your leadership know. And obviously, safe environments are what we're all striving for. So I do think that it's been said that Sue had said is that safety and patient outcomes are really primary, and nursing is the advocate for that. So if you take away the nurses from the bedside and you take away the nurses from the home care settings or the clinical settings, who's doing that job? Who's advocating for the patients? And it's really important that we are there. So thanks for your comment.
Don, I know this issue of nursing leadership is an important one to you.
Right. So one of the things – can I change the segue with that one?
Yes.
As I shared earlier that we're looking at how do we promote nursing in Maine, and in 2010, the Institute of Medicine came out with the future of nursing, and one of it was where are we with nursing leadership? And we were actually challenged in the state of Maine to look at how many nurses serve on community boards in the state of Maine. And the goal was 200 for each state in the country. And it's not a nursing board. It's community boards. It could be a humane society. It could be the Chamber of Commerce. It could be a church board. And in the state of Maine, the number of we had 1,200 nurses respond. And we have right now nurses on 329 community boards in Maine. And when you start looking at the role of nursing and you look at the role of improving the health of our community and how it rolls into the new buzzword of population health, this is critical as we're looking at economic development, patient safety, reducing healthcare costs. So we're really looking at how do we promote nursing leadership at the bedside through community work. The other thing I always try to promote nurses to get really involved in whatever specialty area they work in. It could be the OR, it could be the ED, it could be home care. If there's a state association that has a voice that you can lend yours to, please join it.
Okay, we have an email from Donna. Hi, I'm an RN with a graduate degree in public health, and I've been out of the workforce for a few years, so I feel like I could use a refresher course before I try to re-enter the field. Do any of your panelists know of such a course in Maine? Also, please let your panelists know that those of us who are aging would like part-time work, so creative solutions are needed, such as job sharing.
I think that's a great idea. I think what's actually scary, you've been out of nursing for, you said, a couple of years. It's gotten to the point that nursing is evolving, technology is evolving so quickly that it's actually gotten as short as 6 months that you really need to do that. What I would recommend is that you go to the HR department of whatever medical facility you have near you. They do have the resources to steer you in that direction. I will make one other pitch I did to the graduating class of Central Maine Medical Center, which is the name of the school when I went there. It's the college, New England College of Health Professionals now. And I challenged all of the retirees in the room to actually go back one day a week and start mentoring new staff. So there's other part-time opportunities also.
All right. On that note, we do have to take another break. Please stay with us.
You make Maine Calling possible, as does Maine State Music Theater, presenting Always Patsy Cline, June 7th through June 24th. Tickets online at msmt.org.
Journalism is more than news. It's more than politics. It's more than what happens day to day. Journalism is about human lives. And public broadcasting, particularly Maine Public, does such a splendid job of giving us a light into the lives of our fellow citizens. We learn about people whose experiences have been different from ours, things that bind us more closely together and gives us a sense of that shared experience, makes for stronger communities, and only Maine Public is there to give us that illumination that makes us more connected. As a resource for the people of Maine, there's nobody that reports better on the State House. There's nobody that reports better on things that are going on of great interest to the state of Maine, whether they're features or breaking news stories, than Maine Public Broadcasting. It's a treasure, it's a resource, and we're very, very fortunate to have it. I'm Brenda Garand. I'm from Portland, and I support a bold future for Maine Public Broadcasting.
And join us at 2 o'clock following Maine Calling for Climate One Radio. They'll take a look at how local businesses and political leaders in red states and blue states are preparing for the challenges of climate disruption. That's Climate One Radio, coming up after Maine Calling here on Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling today on the program. What's being done to address a looming nursing crisis? With me today, Michael Nodes. Naz Drovicki is an associate professor and department chair with the Southern Maine Community College. Sue Sepples, associate professor of nursing at USM and founding member of the Maine Partners in Nursing and Practice. And Donna DeBlois is CEO and president of the Maine Health Care at Home. Join our conversation. Give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. I want to go to Julia, who is calling from Hollis, New Hampshire. Hi, Julia. Go ahead.
Hi, I'm a prospective student at Southern Maine Community College, and I wanted to thank you guys so much for putting this program on. I actually had a couple questions for you. My first question was, what would make a brand new graduate from a nursing program in Maine more attractive to employers? I'm wondering what tips and tricks do you guys have for students who are going into the program?
Well, I think... Great. Well, welcome to the nursing profession. I would first off say that understanding what a work-life balance might be, and when folks go who sort of counsel you on to what you might need to do for nursing. Nursing is a rigorous program. For many of our students, they struggle with trying to work full-time and to do a full-time nursing program. Often it just doesn't work. You know, there's family obligations. So I would say get all of your resources lined up before you actually enter into the nursing program, financial resources, family resources. Let everyone know that you're going to be really concentrated and nursing has to be your priority during that time. That would be my best suggestion on getting prepared to enter into the program. Also, if you have been out of school for a while, start slowly. Take one course at a time and meet your prerequisites as you go along. And so when we talk about being filled up for our number of seats, those students have actually met the prerequisites. So there are other courses you can take while you are actually waiting for that actual nursing seat to open up. And so you can take some of your gen ed courses at the same time.
I would add, as you're looking for employment after, I would consider during your course of your education becoming a certified nursing assistant. I think that having some experience within an institutional setting or even a home care setting within the field, and so you become more familiar with some of the language, the terminology, some of the practices, the shift work, the demands, I think that I find that as an employer and looking at hiring to be very attractive.
I would add too, if you know the kind of nursing you want to do, you want to think about getting CNA work in that field, because we always talk about the fact that for some of our CNAs, it's the longest job interview they've ever had. They work at during their nursing school career, and I can say we have hired some incredible nurses who were first CNAs and really learned a lot on the job, and also had the mentoring of experienced nurses while they were in school. So I think that's excellent advice.
What we do at SMCC is once a student completes their first semester, they will be registered with the Maine State Board of Nursing to go ahead and have their CNA registry so that they can actually begin working. So
we do the same.
So that's a great opportunity for students.
Julia, thanks for your question and good luck to you. We'll go to Patrick, who's calling from Scarborough. Hi, Patrick. Go ahead.
Oh, hi. Thank you, Jennifer. I want to thank all the panel there. And I'm going to try to be quick. You know, I'm very passionate about this. I want to make a statement that nurses and teachers are one of the careers that you cannot put a monetary value on them. When you're sick, nothing else matters to you until you get well. And it's the nurses who take care of us, every one of us. Nothing matters. Yet we as a society, the culture here, we don't appreciate nurses or teachers. We don't honor them. We don't compensate them well. So my question is this, you know, to the panelists, I don't know if they can, you know, why is it that, you know, teachers and nurses, you know, who we cannot put, you know, a really monetary value on what they do for society, yet we don't appreciate them.
Patrick, thank you so much for your call. I think everybody in this room agrees with you. Is the reason because nursing and teaching used to be women's professions?
Yes,
absolutely.
What there's a great Peanuts cartoon where Peppermint Patty says, "What do nurses make?" Maybe she says, "What do teachers make?" And he answers, "They make a difference, Patty." Which I think is but that's not enough, you know. So yes, they started out as an all women's profession, and maybe haven't negotiated themselves upward in a way that they might have had they been a male profession in both nursing and teaching. But the money in nursing is certainly much better than it has been, and the money for nurses in Maine has improved significantly even in the last 10 years. So that has changed somewhat.
Thank you, Patrick, for your call. We're going to go up to Augusta and Lisa. Hi, Lisa. Go ahead.
Hi, thank you. I know at least two of you. This is Lisa Miller. Hi, Donna.
Hi.
Hi, Lisa.
I have another question about public health nurses. We used to have a core of public health nurses around 60 back in 2009, and that has been gradually dropping off, mm-hmm. Both by non-application for jobs and by design, I think, in state government to reduce the core. We only have about 20 public health nurses right now, and probably about I think about 12 of them are trained in emergency response. Given that national CDC says infectious disease is going to be one of the top five public health threats for a long time, do you think that's adequate? Do we have enough public health nurses to respond?
Lisa, thanks for your call. And I know there's a bill before the legislature to increase funding for public health nurses. Any of you have thoughts on it?
I think because the nursing shortage has, and often the loudest voices when there is a nursing shortage, is the acute care environment, and probably second to that, the behavioral care and the community care, that public health nursing often doesn't get the focus that it needs to get. And it's an absolute need, and an absolute need for us to turn our focus to that, because we will have major public health issues that we will not have nurses on the front lines for, given these trends. So I think that's something really to address.
Lisa, thanks for your call. We're almost out of time. I'm going to see how much I can squeeze in here. Andrew on Twitter asks, how do unions and frequent new nurse versus tenured salary imbalances push new nurses away from the profession? A lot in one short tweet.
Well, from a personal experience, we actually have a unionized branch of our organization, and that has not been an attractant within our organization. That is not a culture that some of the new nurses are comfortable moving into, but that's maybe that's my political statement. I think for some that could be a deterrent. For others, maybe not.
I came from outside of Maine where unions were very strong institutionally, and I don't think that it was a deterrent for folks to go into nursing. I do think that it helped in some ways negotiating during difficult times, and the unions were strong forces to do that.
Sure, and I know this is a debate that could probably take up an entire Maine Calling program. Amanda on Facebook posts, do you think the public's perception of nurses needs to change? As a nurse, it feels more like people think the hospital is a hotel and I am the wait staff.
Mm. Well, nurses have traditionally been the most trusted and honored profession for quite some time, other than after 9/11. That was the 1 year that the fire department, firemen actually moved up to that to hold that honor. But so I think the perception of nursing is that we are trusted and we are valued. Do I think that we have a different client? We have a much more informed client and a much more educated client, and they understand that advocating for themselves in a safe environment is necessary. So I do think that we are coming across a different type of patient, where in the past it might have been yes, sir, no, sir, whatever pill you want me to take. Now it's explain to me what those pills are for and how could they harm me and how are they benefiting me. And that's why I think nurses, it's important to have a nurse there to be able to explain that to you. Any other folks may not understand the rationale as to why that medication is important. A nurse can tell you why and can save your life.
It's also important that nurses, we find our voice within the partnership within the healthcare system, that we are not a subservient role any longer, that we are an equal partner and have a very strong voice and a knowledge to back that up. And I think as a profession, it's important that we continue to promote that publicly and within our health, within our health system that we're working in. And I think until we find that voice and really promote it, we're going to stay where we are. But I think we're getting better all the time. I think we're getting a stronger voice. We are trying to promote diversity within our practice. Currently, there's 27,000 nurses in the state of Maine. 23,000 are RNs, 2,000 are LPNs, and the rest are advanced practice. Of that diversity, 92% of us are women. Only 8% of nurses in Maine are men. And I think we're working really, really hard to change that diversity.
Well, thank you all for being here today. Donna DeBlois, President and CEO of Maine Healthcare at Home, Sue Sepples, Associate Professor of Nursing at USM and a founding member of the Maine Partners in Nursing and Practice, and Michael Nosdrovicki, an Associate Professor and Department Chair at Southern Maine Community College. John Keimel ran the board today. Sam Dearen answered your calls. You can find past editions of Maine Calling as well as a link to our audio archives at mainecalling.net. Today's show will be rebroadcast tonight at 8. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Tomorrow on the program, join me for a conversation about helping people recover from financial issues. We'll learn about a new program to help individuals in recovery from alcohol or drug addiction get back on their financial feet. We will also get answers to questions about addressing personal bankruptcy, student loan debt, medical debt, and more. I'm Jennifer Rooks. This is Maine Public Radio.